like time to start. So I think we'll go. Hey, there we go. So I was kind of looking around the room and thinking about ideas for teaching this and teaching this material to children. And you know, we've already pointed out how this quarter is among the slowest of all the quarters you're going to have in the 3-year cycle. By slowest, I mean it's the most amount of time for the least amount of material. So you can there are some things you can do with that time. One is go into more detail on the stories, and these may be some of the lesser known stories. Now, obviously, Samson, you know, people will have heard of Samson and some of the stories of Joshua, but you could pick some of those lesser known stories and maybe work on those. Some other things you could do would be, and this will take effort, but teaching does take effort, doesn't it? One of the things you could consider doing is reviewing some of the earlier periods, like some of the things that happened in Genesis, some of the things that happened in the wandering in the wilderness, reviewing those with your students. Any time you spend reviewing is not wasted time. Trust me, I know that if I don't continually go over something again and again, I forget it. I just do. I have to keep things, have to have reminders all the time. And then I was thinking about your classroom. You probably would want to make sure that you have one of these in your classroom ahead of time. Most of the classrooms do, but you might, before you go in, just walk in and take a look at it and check the condition of it. It may require a little bit of maintenance. Go ahead and get that squared away. And you know, when you get to the judges, you've got that built in up there. You know, you may want to wait until you've memorized it before you point it out to them, because they may cheat during the saying of it aloud with one another. And the other thing is, I noticed a map back here, which this map has nothing to do with the topic we're covering. But if you could find a map in the resource room that is the land of Palestine, perhaps the division of the land, if you could find a map like that to put on a bulletin board. That way, if you don't have a map, and I've tried to put a map in every one of my presentations in PowerPoint, but that way, if you don't have one of those maps, if during the course of review or anything like that, a place comes to mind, you just walk over to the map and kind of point where it would be, and you always have that map handy. In case you do finish a little early, you can walk over to a map and review some locations. So just kind of putting out ideas for teaching this class and making that time really effective. Also, from the last lesson, we spent a lot of time discussing Jephthah and the vow Jephthah made. And what did Jephthah actually do with his daughter? Very, very good study. Obviously, if you're teaching kindergartners, first, second graders, you can't really go into that. The things we went into, the subtleties of the language, and did it really mean burnt offering? Those kinds of things. The other passages that show that God did not want to be worshipped with human sacrifices. You know, those are going to be a little tougher. So I was thinking of how you're going to do that. One is, when you plan your schedule out, you won't allot as much time for that as we did. We allotted a class on purpose to discuss that, because if you're going to be teaching that, it's really important that you understand and that you've studied it, because you may get a question, maybe not at that lower age group, but when you get up into junior high, they're going to wonder, you know, what has happened to Jephthah's daughter? You need to be prepared for that, and you need to have your mind made up. You need to have studied that issue and have a conviction on that. And you need to present. And you can present, you know, a couple of sides and let your conviction be known. That's one way to handle that. But by the time you get into junior high and high school, you could probably spend maybe not quite as much time as we did, but you can spend some extra time on that. They need to start thinking about those tougher issues in the Bible, and they would not have done it younger. You know, probably not. Up until, you know, late elementary, junior high is when they would have started that. So you could, if you're teaching that age group, you could allot some more time to it to get the students to thinking about that. So just kind of throwing out some ideas for teaching, and that's really one of the purposes of the foundations class, is to give the teachers ideas for teaching that. And I'm no expert on teaching children, but I was thinking, and Rhonda and I were actually talking about this a little bit after the class. So if you're teaching, you know, five-year-olds, maybe first, second graders, you know, the story of Jephthah, you know, like, to me, one of the things that as I'm teaching that to my children, one of the things that I take away from it is, and maybe I'm oversimplifying a bit, but one of the lessons I take away for that age group is, don't make a promise. Just don't promise, right? That's, you know, the Bible does teach that concept of you know, making, you know, making promises, let your yes be yes and your no be no. You know, at that age, you look at what happened when Jephthah made a promise that he didn't really want to keep. Now, and then the other lesson you can bring from that is, when you do make a vow or a promise, it's extremely important that you keep it. And the other thing is, if you make a promise, be careful what you do promise, right? He promised something that really he didn't want to give away, and the effect affected more than just Jephthah, didn't it? It affected his daughter. So you don't want to, you know, you don't want to make promises that get other people into trouble as well. So there are some things you can teach to children along those lines as well. From that lesson. Any thoughts or anything up to this point on that? And one thing I did want to hit again very, very quickly, not spend a lot of time on it, but is the story of the Ephraimites. And one of the things that you remember after Jephthah made that vow, after God delivered the Ammonites to him, and Jephthah, very admirable character in his dependence on God, and he made that vow because he knew it was a serious thing he was doing, and he took it very seriously, and he gave the credit to God. So I'm not at all criticizing Jephthah even for the vow he made, but especially given that he was so determined to follow through with it. But after all that was over, you'll remember the Ephraimites. Now, we had run into the Ephraimites doing something similar to this before. Do you remember that? Yeah, with Gideon, right? With Gideon, the Ephraimites. Now, it was a little different. Now, what did the Ephraimites do with Jephthah? What did they say to him? Do you remember what they said to him? We did hurry through this a little bit last time, so that's why I kind of wanted to pick it up, and we didn't really make the reference back because we were talking about some very important things as well. So, they threatened to burn Jephthah's house down with fire. Did they do that with Gideon? No, they didn't. They just reprimanded Gideon sharply, the text says. So they complained about it, but they just reprimanded him sharply for that. The other thing that's a little bit different, Jephthah, how did he handle it? How did Jephthah handle it? Yes. Yep, that's right. So extremely different in how they handled that. And again, I wouldn't criticize either man's method for handling it. First off, with Jephthah, the Ephraimites were far more aggressive and threatening than they were with Gideon. They threatened to burn his house down, and they would have done it too. It was certainly a threat. So it seems as if Ephraim came ready for war to Jephthah. The other thing is, when you look at that, Rick's point's a good one. Gideon was very diplomatic, wasn't he? You know, I'm the least of the Manassites, and you know, the gleaning in Ephraim is greater than, you know, the entire harvest of my family. So he was very, you know, diplomatic about it, and that seemed to satisfy them. But if you look at the background of Gideon and compare that to the background of Jephthah, I think that may have had these are very different men, aren't they? What was Gideon doing when he was called upon to judge Israel? Do you remember? Yeah, he was hiding, wasn't he? He was in the threshing floor, in the wine press, threshing out wheat to hide from the Midianites, right? And what was Jephthah doing when he was called to be a judge? He was going on rage, wasn't he? he was already kind of I don't want to use the term mercenary, but he was a warrior. I think that's a fair term. He was a warrior. So it was, you know, careful, you know, what the Ephraimites could learn a lesson as, you know, the different people respond different ways to very similar actions. And the Bible doesn't criticize either man for his response, so I won't either. But I just find that an interesting difference between the two. So, and Freddie showed some good pictures to show how that that you couldn't just cross the Jordan any old place. There were certain places where there were fords that you could go and cross the Jordan. And so Jephthah was very smart in that, very tactical. He was a warrior. He knew how to do that. So he seized all those fords so that the Ephraimites couldn't cross. And then everyone who crossed, they would stop and ask, are you an Ephraimite? And the funny thing is, that if they said no, he would say, well, then say Shibboleth. And the Ephraimites couldn't say that. And that's something to help relate that to your children. They will have, most likely have some Hispanic kids in their class. Ask your kids, can you roll your R's? Now, some of them may be able to, but I know my kids can't roll their R's. I can't roll my R's. And if someone might ask you to say something like that, and you can point out the differences in the dialects of people. Like, if someone's from Canada, we might say out and about, right? And we would hear out and about, and we'd know, all right, they're not from here, right? And that's similar to what they were doing. It was the dialect for the Ephraimites. And you can really bring that home with the children, and they'll understand that. And they'll get how that, that's how they knew they were Ephraimites. Because they would have all been Jews, so they wouldn't have been able to tell just by looking which tribe they were from. So that's an interesting story of how Jephthah did that. And he did, and you know, this is really the beginnings of some civil war here in Israel. I mean, this is Gilead, which would have been from which tribe? Yeah, in Gad, right? And then against the Ephraimites. So this was civil war. These were tribes of Israel at war against one another. And we'll see more of that in this period of Bible history. We're going to see some more of that infighting in Israel. All right, any thoughts or questions up to this point? But I did want to take some time and review. Yeah, Bernie? Yes, I think that is the conclusion, is that he was not expecting an animal. He was expecting a person. I'll defer that to Freddie. He studied that a little closer than I did to prepare. But that was my understanding from the class and the study, is that the older translations render that, you know, whatsoever. But I think whosoever, where the text indicates that Jephthah expected a person to come out, just not his only daughter, I think is the idea. Any thought? Anyone else want to maybe hit that a little better than I did just now? Yes. Yeah, yeah. Right, yeah. Good point. So he was not expecting... Yeah, he was definitely expecting a person. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And again, I think that's one of the key points in determining that Jephthah didn't really burn his daughter on an altar, that offer her as a burnt offering. I think that's... That and the other point Freddie made about the language, where that burnt offering could have had another meaning as well, not just actually a burnt offering.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That is my understanding. Yeah. And that's really my position on that, I think, as well. Yeah. Definitely. Good. I see some nod from others that I respect. So good. That helps me. Thanks for bringing that up, Bernie, because that is, I think, a good... particularly, I'm guessing you'll be teaching high schoolers or junior high, or... Okay, fifth and sixth graders. Yeah, they would be old enough to go into that a little bit. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, good. Any other thoughts? All right, so we're going to cover Ibzan, Elon, Abdon, and Samson. We're not going to cover all of Samson today, just the foretelling of his birth and the incident with his wife in Timnah. And so we'll look at that. So Ibzan, he was from Bethlehem. Bob points out in his book that was probably Bethlehem in Zebulun. There were two Bethlehems. The one we know is the Bethlehem in Judah, right? Bethlehem Ephrathah, because of the... We know the rest of the Bible story, but in these days and throughout the Bible, typically if it was referring to Bethlehem in Judah, it would say either Bethlehem Judah or Bethlehem Ephrathah. So it was probably the Bethlehem in Zebulun. Also, when you consider, who was the previous judge? It was Jephthah. Who was his enemy? Who was Jephthah's enemy? The Ammonites. Okay. Now, and at the beginning of that story, it was the Ammonites and the Philistines had begun to oppress Israel. We don't read any conflict between Jephthah and the Philistines, and it wouldn't make sense based on where Jephthah judged. And so I'm getting the idea that these are kind of judges that follow on during the years of peace that followed Jephthah, and they would have been, I think it makes sense that they would have been up and away from the Philistine oppression. We're not told anything about encounters with the Philistine with these judges. So he had 30 sons and gave away 30 daughters in marriage. The text also says that he brought in women from afar off to marry his 30 sons. And I found that interesting. I don't know, you know, the Bible just doesn't say why or give us any insight into that. But the women did come from afar off. So he didn't marry other Israelites. And he didn't intermarry with the Canaanites who were in the land either. So, I just interesting, but I don't know that we know really anything else about that. And he judged for 7 years. And then we have Elon. Elon is specifically mentioned as being from Zebulun. Okay? So, in that northern territory, not all the way to the north, but there in the northern territory. And he judged 10 years, and we aren't really told anything else about Elon, just that. Aijalon, there was another Aijalon that was, I think, in Dan. And so this is the one in Zebulun. And how do I know that? Verse 12, Aijalon in the country of Zebulun. So it was definitely in Zebulun. And then finally, Abdon. Abdon is the son of Hillel. He had 40 sons and 30 grandsons who rode on 70 donkey colts. Does that remind you of any other judge? Any other one? Can you remember him? Oh, that's a tough task, isn't it? Can you remember? I'll give you a hint. This other judge, he had 30 sons, right? And he also had 30 cities. Does that help at all? 30 cities, 30 sons? I'm trying to give you a hint. I heard it. Jair. Yeah, Jair. Okay, and what were the cities called? Havoc Jair, which just means cities of Jair. Okay? So you see how you can just stick a review point in there like that anytime as you're teaching? Just throw one in there. And there are things in the Bible that will call to memory other things. So that does remind me some of Jair. Just that we're told about him. And he lived and died in the hill country of Ephraim, the text says. The Pirathonite. So in the mountains of... Also it says the mountains of the Amalekites. We don't really know anything else about that. Maybe there was a family of Amalekites that lived in Ephraim. We don't know. But it definitely wasn't the Amalekites off to the south. You know, it wasn't that region that it's talking about. So we just don't know anything about the mountain of Amalek, your translation may say. So that's the next three judges, Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon. Not told anything about their enemy either. Okay? Perhaps just judged in the peace that followed Jephthah. I don't know. Anybody else have thoughts or ideas on that? All right. So the next judge is, well, the cycle, it begins again. And we see that at chapter 13, verse 1. Again, Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. So we have this cycle going where they'll do evil. They'll cry out. God sends a judge to deliver them after they repent. So this time the enemy was the Philistines. And the Philistines oppressed Israel for 40 years. The thing we don't know is when did this 40 years start? Did it start when Samson was born? Did it start before Samson was born? Did it start, you know, when did it start? We just don't know for sure. And you'll remember, just a reminder, the oppressors that were mentioned in the beginning of the story of Jephthah. The 40 years could date back to, you know, that time of Jephthah. We're not told... the time of Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon is less than 40 years, so it could be that same time frame going on there. So I don't know. Also, the other thing is that the text says, and I think I may have this on the slide, that Samson began to deliver Israel from the Philistines. Okay? He began to do that, but he didn't complete that. And we know that because... we're going to see the Philistines are still a thorn in the side of Eli and Samuel as well. So, just a quick note about Samson. He did some immoral things, no question about that. However, we all know that he's listed alongside Jephthah as a man of faith in Hebrews 11 and chapter 32, or Hebrews chapter 11 verse 32. some immoral things he did. He gambled. We'll see that today. I mean, maybe gamble is a strong word, but he basically placed a bet. I mean, that's what he did. He made a bet in the story today. He chose a wife contrary to the law, right? He was not supposed to marry the inhabitants of the land. So he chose a wife, and the reason is, she pleases me. And then later on, Freddie will tell you about this on Wednesday, but he goes to visit a harlot as well. So he did some immoral things, but he is listed as a hero of faith. And I think, again, you'll see this throughout the Bible. Even men who were considered faithful men for most of their lives or for much of their lives, the Bible doesn't hide their mistakes from us at all. I mean, you see that example again and again and again. Abraham, David, and so forth. So they, you know, the things he did that were good is that he recognized where his strength came from. His strength came from God. He did recognize that. He did live a lifetime of strict adherence to the Nazarite vow. So we do see that. That seemed to be something that was extremely important to him, to honor that vow. And so that's some interesting things just kind of from an overview of Samson. So, you know, don't go at the... You point out the immoral things he did. Point out that God was not pleased with those. Those are not examples of Samson we should follow. But don't impugn his character, because the Bible lists Samson as a hero of faith. So I think we should have that certain respect for Samson as a man who followed God, because the inspired writer did later on. Yes? Yeah, very good point. Very good point. Yeah, and even the last thing that he did was a prayer. I mean, there was a very fervent prayer that preceded the last act of valor that Samson did. Yes. Good. Appreciate that. All right, so let's get into... Oh, I was going to point out where Samson was from. He was from Zorah. That's listed in Joshua as a city on the border of Judah and Dan. So I've given kind of my best guess as to where that was. This is the country of Judah. Here's the country of Dan. So Zorah there on the as kind of a border city between Judah and Dan. That's where he was from. So Manoah lived in Zorah on the border of Judah and Dan. And Manoah's wife had no children. And so the angel of the Lord appeared to her and told her that though you're barren, you will have a son. And the angel of the Lord also told her that this son would be a Nazarite from birth. So the instructions to her were, you do not drink any wine or eat anything from the grape now, because he will be a Nazarite from birth. And he will begin to deliver. Verse 5, that's where that beginning was. He was the one who began to deliver Israel out of the hands of the Philistines. So she went and told Manoah about that. So she goes and tells Manoah about that. And Manoah is, I mean, obviously and understandably excited. And he wants to hear it from this angel of the Lord as well. So he prays. Maybe that's where Samson learned to pray, perhaps. But he prays and asks God to send the angel of the Lord back again, to send this messenger back. And so the Lord hears Manoah, and while his wife is in the field alone, the angel of the Lord appears to him again, or to her again, and she runs and gets Manoah and brings him back. And he asks her, "Are you the one who told my wife these things?" And he says, "Yes, I am." And Manoah is very concerned about what to do. I mean, this is big, big news. She's been barren, and this is the one who will begin to deliver Israel from the hand of the Philistines. So he asks, "What special instructions are there? What can we do? How should we take care of this son?" And again, he reiterated that he would be a Nazarite from birth, and that his wife is not to have any anything from the vine. And then verse 13 of chapter 13. So the angel of the Lord said to Manoah, "Of all that I said to the woman, let her be careful," and so forth. And again, reiterated the the fact that it would be a Nazirite vow. So the Nazirite vow, real quickly, is described in Numbers chapter 6, where the Nazirite vow is described. So there are three big things about the Nazirite vow. Do you remember what those three big things are? Don't cut your hair, okay? The entire time of the vow. Now, typically, the vow was for a period of time, okay? And that's how it's described in number 6. Someone would voluntarily take a Nazirite vow for a period of time. So do not cut your hair. What was the second thing? No wine, nothing from the grape, right? Not from the seed to the leaf to the skin, right? Nothing. It says from the seed to the skin, not the leaf. I don't know where I pulled that out of my mind. But still, nothing from the vine. No produce from the vine. Okay? And what was the third thing? Yeah, no dead body, right? Could not touch, come in contact with a dead body. Not even, and number 6 goes into this and says, not even your mother or your father or brother, not even immediate family. Okay, and now it does give an allowance for if that happens, if they die suddenly when you're around, but it does say that that is a sin, even if that happens, and that you're required to do a sin offering for, you know, coming in contact with a dead body. So it seems to me, Bob points this out in his book, and I can't think of any other explanation. It seems to me that if someone were a Nazirite from birth for their entire life, that third restriction seems to be not present. And you think of Samuel, right? Samuel was involved in offering of sacrifices. So, you know, he would have had to have, you know, been in contact with dead bodies at some point in time of animals anyway. So there would have been, you know, there were, it seems that would be something that would be just about impossible to keep throughout, you know, your entire life. So that I don't know about that, but that seems like a reasonable explanation for that, because we know that Samson comes in contact with several dead bodies, and the Bible never criticizes that about him. And whereas when he does cut his hair, we do see God's displeasure with that, and that the Spirit of the Lord leaves him, and not that he voluntarily did it, but it was done for him, and we do see, you know, that God does not approve of that, I think. At the end, yes, that's right. Very good point. Very good point. For the temporary one, when the vow was over, you were to shave your head, and the hair was to go in the fire as part of the sacrifice. Yeah, very good. Exactly. Yes. Yeah, definitely. And we do see that it was important to Samson. And again, the three that are the famous ones are Samson and Samuel and John the Baptist, who were Nazirites from birth. Good. So that's the instruction. So Manoah wanted the angel to stay. Can we detain you for a bit? And so he goes to get a goat and offer to feed this visitor. And again, you can tell they don't know for sure whether it's divine or not. This messenger, he is divine or not. And the angel of the Lord says, I will not eat your food even if you detain me. And if you offer a burnt offering, you must offer it to Jehovah. So the goat that the young goat that he had gotten to prepare in the meal offering, he puts it on the... Wait, I'm skipping a detail. Before this, they ask him what his name was. I take it maybe to give credit for who had foretold the things that were going to happen. And he says, I can't tell you my name. Why do you ask my name? And I won't tell it to you because it is wonderful. Not that his name is wonderful, but you know that wonderful was literally his name. But I think that his name, a characteristic of his name, was wonderful, is how I read that. And again, Manoah offers the goat and the meal offering. And as the fire is ascending from the altar, the angel of the Lord goes into that fire and ascends up into heaven. Just an amazing sight for them. And it was not lost on Manoah and his wife. They see that and they're amazed, and they realize that this is the Lord. And they're afraid. or this is the angel of the Lord. And they're afraid. And they say, we've seen God. We're going to die. And, you know, they reason it out and say, well, if God intended to kill us, He wouldn't have given us this message, and we wouldn't have this son, you know, who's going to begin to deliver Israel. So they realize that they're not going to die. And then after that, Samson was born, and he grew, and the Lord blessed him, and the Spirit of the Lord began to move on him at Mahana Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol. So that's this is the foretelling and the birth of Samson. So a little later, Samson decides that he wants a wife. So he goes to get a wife from the daughters of the Philistines in Timnah. Samson's mother and father do not approve. And the text here says that they didn't approve because they didn't know it was from the Lord. That, particularly for your older students, may require a little bit of discussion. They didn't know it was from the Lord. That does not mean that God wanted Samson or any other of the Israelites to marry a Philistine, to break the law in that. That's not what that means. But what was happening is that God, in His providence, was going to use this occasion to begin to move Israel against the Philistines. And Manoah and his wife did not know that. That's how I take that, is that God was using His providence. And we see that throughout the Bible story. God can use those who break His commandments to accomplish His purpose and to use that for good. We see that in the story of Joseph and a number of other places. And I think that's the meaning of that there. And I would certainly hear other thoughts on that. Yeah, exactly. That is a very good point. God did not make Samson go and get that. But God recognized that Samson was determined. Now, God would have known Samson's heart. Would you say Samson was determined to marry this woman? Flat out determined, wasn't he? And as parents, you've probably seen a kid flat out determined to do something, right? And you really don't want him to, but you finally give in and say, okay, just to let them learn their lesson, right? Maybe not something as big or sinful, but something that just may not be a good idea. You just, okay, go do it. And you're going to find out why I didn't want you to. You sometimes do that. And I think that here's the not that the Lord made Samson do it or told Samson to do it or anything, but he recognized Samson was determined and allowed it to happen and used the event. I think that's the teaching of that passage. So Samson went down to Timnah, and he went with his mother and father, but apparently not at the same time, or he diverted at some point in time. But he went out, and there's a lion that came after him. And the text says the Spirit of the Lord came over Samson. So this was, Samson didn't have the strength apart from God. So the lion comes on him, and he tears it with his... kills the lion with his bare hand, tears it apart as a young goat, the Bible says. And to me, there's a big difference between a lion and a young goat. One I'm quite afraid of, one I'm not. And he kills that lion with his bare hands. And he doesn't tell his mother and father. And again, it was surprising to Samson that this happened. So he continues on down, and he meets this woman from Timnah, and she pleases him well. So then some time passes, and Samson is going back down to Timnah. And where is Timnah? I pointed out where Zorah was. Here's Timnah. Just a few miles, not that far at all. And I may have them even farther apart than they actually were. But Timnah there in the land of the Philistines, Zorah being a border city on Judah and Dan, it would have been near that territory. So he goes down to Timnah, this time for the marriage, for the feast. And it was going to be so when Samson gets there, along the way, right, again he's with his parents, but must have diverted. So along the way he goes over to see the carcass of the lion that he had killed. And lo and behold, there's a swarm of bees in there, and there's some honey. So Samson reaches in and takes some of the honey and goes on his way eating it, and he shares some of that honey with his mother and father, but he doesn't tell them where he got the honey. So that would be important because this would have been unclean. The lion was clearly an unclean animal, and to eat food that had been in contact with an unclean animal, an unclean corpse, would have clearly been unclean, and I don't believe his mother and father would have gone along with that. So that's kind of the issue there with that, and why it would have been important that he didn't tell. And the other reason why it would be important, we'll see a little bit later in the story, why he didn't tell them this. So he does share it with them, and they continue on their way. And the other thing is that this would have been a very unusual thing to happen. Bees didn't typically go and build hives and make honey in you know, carcasses. That was not, we don't see that today, do we? No, it's not where they do that. No, never heard of it, exactly. So a very unusual thing. And also it makes a good riddle a little later on, so that lets you know it's an unusual thing. So when he gets there, the Philistines, there's a feast for 7 days, and the Philistines see him and they give him some companions. They give him 30 companions to be with him. The feast is for 7 days, and Samson poses the riddle to them. And he places a bet. This is why I said gambling. I don't know what else to call it other than a bet. I bet you can't figure out my riddle, is in essence what he's saying. He says, if you solve my riddle, then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing for the 30 companions they had given him. But if you can't, you'll give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. It's a bet. I bet you $100, right? That's how that goes. I win, I get it. You win, you get it. So the riddle was, out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. And they couldn't explain it. So the text says, at the close of verse 14, now for 3 days they could not explain the riddle. But it came to pass on the seventh day that they said to Samson's wife, entice your husband. Your translation may say fourth day there, I'm not sure. And I'm not sure exactly what the right answer is. The Septuagint says the fourth day there. So we don't know exactly when, but at some point in time, either the fourth day or the seventh day, the Philistines said to Samson's wife, look, we're going to burn your house down. Get him to tell you this, or we're going to burn your house down. Samson says, look, I haven't even explained it to my mother and father. Remember when he gave them the honey? He didn't tell them where he got it. So he says, I haven't even explained it to my mother and father. Why would I explain it to you? And she had wept on him the 7 days. So apparently she had already been trying before they had threatened her. And the threat was, what, did you come here to take our things away from us? That was the threat. We're going to burn your house down. So apparently she, you know, had been trying to get this answer for most of the 7 days. And then on the seventh day, after this threat, she really increased her pressure on Samson to do that with the weeping. And verse 17 says that on the seventh day he told her because she pressed him so much. So then she explained it to the Philistines who were there. And then obviously they are able to answer the riddle. They know the answer now, right? What's sweeter than honey? What's stronger than a lion? And he responds, he was not deceived. He knew how they knew the answer. And he responded, if you hadn't plowed with my heifer, then you would not have solved my riddle. So then Samson thinks this is a little bit unfair. So he goes down to Ashkelon. Those are the slides. So he goes down to Ashkelon. Ashkelon was already labeled on the map, so a Philistine city. And he kills 30 Philistines. I'll show you, right? You cheat to win, but you know, he didn't see fit to pay out of his own pocket for this. So he goes to Ashkelon, kills 30 Philistines, takes their clothes, and then gives it. And then to close the story, Samson's wife, we find out a little later it was Samson's father who did this, but Samson's wife is given to his best man. Samson was very, very angry with her for how she had treated him. That's what we're to cover. Good. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. 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 Okay. Could have been. So the Amalekites took the old city of Jericho. Could have been. Any other thoughts or questions? Yes. Yeah. Good. Good point. Yeah. And the kids can get that, no doubt. Good. Any other thoughts? Thanks for your attention. Appreciate it.